CBSN Originals' latest documentary explores the decades-long link between American Christianity and conservative politics.
Faith under fire in Texas. This billboard taken down after a Dallas newspaper columnist and the mayor took offense with the message.
Among the rioters who broke into the U.S. Capitol was this group invoking the name of Jesus on the Senate floor.
There's the world of faith, and then there's the world of politics. But what happens when these two worlds collide? This is Global Affairs Today. Let's start the conversation. Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Imani Cherry, and today we're talking about a political worldview called Christian nationalism. It's something in the United States, at least, that has been an increasingly hot topic since January 6, when rioters stormed the U.S. Capitol, some of them carrying Christian crosses and signs that said Jesus Saves or Jesus 2020. So what exactly is Christian nationalism, and what impact does it have on our politics? To start off our discussion today, we're joined by Amanda Tyler, Executive Director of the Baptist Joint Committee on Religious Liberty, which is based here in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the program, Amanda.
Oh, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you.
So the BJC has been at the forefront of raising awareness around this issue. You launched a major campaign in about July 2019 surrounding Christian nationalism. So tell me, this might be a new term for some people. How do you define Christian nationalism?
So I think that's a great place to start because Christian nationalism is a term that is not universally understood. So in our initiative, Christians Against Christian Nationalism, we define Christian nationalism as an ideology that tries to merge our identities as Americans and Christians. It suggests to be a true Christian, one has to be an American, or to be a real American, one has to be Christian. And implicit in this is, again, it's an ideology. It's not a religion, though there are certainly overlaps with Christianity. We also like to distinguish Christian nationalism from patriotism. Patriotism is a love of country. Nationalism is a kind of blind allegiance to country that places country over everything else, including our religion. And so we view Christian nationalism as not only a threat to our unity as Americans and our pluralistic society, but also to our identity as Christians and our ability to faithfully follow Jesus.
So you mentioned about the distinguished term between patriotism and nationalism. So on January 6th, we saw a number of people in the crowd going to the Capitol that held, you know, religious insignia or signs. Your campaign started well before the events on January 6th. So what was the catalyst that started the movement Christians versus Christian nationalism at the BJC?
So Christian nationalism is not new. It didn't start on January 6th, and it didn't even start in July 2019. It's been around really since the founding of our country. But a couple of years ago, we at BJC really saw an uptick in both the frequency and the intensity of Christian nationalism. We saw much more frequent examples of this ideology and this exclusion of others who didn't adhere to a certain image of Christianity. We saw that as a threat to our unity as Americans. We saw that as a threat to religious freedom for all. And we were also really concerned about increasingly violent manifestations of Christian nationalism. Christian nationalism in the hands of violent extremists can lead to deadly violence, as we saw in things like the massacre at Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston in 2015, or the Tree of Life synagogue shooting in 2018. And so we just were very concerned about the violence that was being spurred by Christian nationalism, as well as some of the maybe more mundane examples, but that were just happening more frequently. And we also were responding to what we sensed, not just from BJC, but from a broader ecumenical movement of Christians who really saw a need to push back against Christian nationalism, who saw this as a threat to our faith. And so we coordinated the Christians Against Christian Nationalism statement with a number of other religious leaders and hosted a platform that allows individuals who self-identify as Christians to take a public stand against Christian nationalism, and also to get the kinds of resources they need to have conversations in their communities of faith on the issue.
Well, so there's been a campaign in the state legislators called Project Blitz, which has kind of formalized, you know, some Christian nationalists and tried to formalize some of their ideology into, you know, law. You made a statement that says Christian nationalism tends to shrink down Christianity to fit into an American-sized box. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think that Christian nationalism tries to domesticate Christianity, tries to fit it into our very human and very American sensibilities of what religion ought to be. It tries to control Christianity and for its own purposes. And again, this is not something new. We've seen this happen in our history as Americans. We saw Christianity used and defiled to justify slavery, to justify Jim Crow segregation. So there are prior examples of Christianity being used by the powers of the state to try to justify state action. And so we think about Christianity, we think about God as being so much bigger than any one nation, it being a global, international religion, and to really transcend our human experience. And so these examples of trying to wrap Christianity or the cross in an American flag really lessens the power of our religion, we think, to do good in a world that desperately needs it.
So one quick question, is religious freedom for everyone or is it just for Christians? When we use that term, we often see it associated with Christianity, but does that protect all religions in this country at least?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Religious freedom for all. It includes people who, ascribe to any number of religious traditions. It also includes people who choose not to be religious. If we don't protect everyone's religious freedom, then everyone's religious freedom is also under threat. And these are the core principles that we at BJC have been dedicated to for more than 80 years. And so our Christians Against Christian Nationalism initiative, we take a firm stand and name and call out Christian nationalism. But we say that the best antidote to the poison of Christian nationalism is a recommitment and an understanding, a really thorough understanding of what it means to stand for religious freedom for everyone, to say that our status as citizens of the United States is not dependent on a religious view, for instance, to say that people of all religions and none have a responsibility to engage constructively in the public square. So we are standing up for religious freedom for all, and we think that there needs to be a greater understanding and conversation around these principles, and then that can help us understand and root out Christian nationalism.
Well, thank you so much, Amanda. You know, we really appreciate you having taking the time to be on the show with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Imani, and I would encourage your viewers to learn more at ChristiansAgainstChristianNationalism.org.
So we're going to take a break right now, but when we come back, we're going to go a little bit deeper and ask the questions, the hard questions about Christian nationalism and what it means to be a Christian in this world today. Welcome back. We're talking today about a political worldview that seeks to create a Christian nation. and I'm glad to welcome two guests today to help us work through this topic. Dr. Nick Miller is a professor of church history and the director of the International Religious Liberty Institute at Andrews University. And Edward Woods III is the chairman of the Conscience and Justice Council. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So we've been talking a lot about Christian nationalism in the U.S. context, but we don't just see these ideas in America. Is that right?
Yes, that is right. Christian nationalism was around long before America was around. And in fact, many countries around the world have what we would call official or formally established either churches or other religions. What made America unique to begin with was that we chose to create a civil state that was separate from our religious identity. So as we talk about the rise of Christian nationalism, it's certainly not unique to America. What is unique is the influence that this movement is now gaining within America.
So, Edward, I want to ask you, what's the difference between being a Christian and a Christian nationalist?
Well, I think Amanda summed it up really, really clearly with the BJC in terms of how she identified that when we look at Christianity and when we look at nationalism, I look at Christianity from a person of faith standpoint as someone who follows Christ. Whereas when I look at nationalism, I see someone who believes that country supersedes Christ. So those are the two fundamental differences that I would see between Christians and Christian nationalists.
So generally, what's the end goal of Christian nationalism? Like, what does it seek to achieve at the end of the day? I'll start with you, Nick.
So ultimately, the Christian nationalist is seeking a merger between the identity of his country and the identity of his religion. So in a truly Christian nationalist state, all citizens would be Christians, and all the Christians would be citizens, and the government would somehow reflect formally the teachings and doctrines and practices of the church, both symbolically and also implementing them into their legal systems.
So would that be a theocracy? Is that what they aim to do at the end of the day with this movement?
Ultimately, that would be the end goal of it. Not all Christian nationalists are necessarily theocrats, but they're tending that direction. And certainly some Christian nationalists would like a full-blown theocracy where our laws were reflecting directly the laws of the Bible. So theocracy is an end game.
So you're saying it's a merger between American civic life and Christian moral ideology. Is that correct?
Yes. I think that's a fair way of putting it. And it's not that the government can't care about morality. If we look at the Ten Commandments, we see murder, theft, perjury. All these things are things that the government enforces. But what the government doesn't enforce are the first four commandments on the Ten Commandments, and it shouldn't do that. It shouldn't enforce those beliefs and practices that are exclusively Christian and not shared by other faiths, beliefs, and non-beliefs in the community.
So, Edward, this doesn't sound so bad for me as a Christian. I want a society that's kind of based on some of my beliefs. Is there anything wrong with wanting a moral society and, particularly a Christian, leaning moral society? Is there anything wrong with that?
Well, I think we have to be careful of the dog whistles of what Christian nationality, nationalism really means. We all know that all Muslims are not terrorists. We know that all immigrants are not illegal. We know that all Native Americans are not savages. And we know that all Black people are not thugs. But when you listen to the rhetoric of Christian nationalists, you have to be very in tune to the dog whistles that come as a result of their propaganda. I mean, it sounds good, it sounds pleasing, but sometimes you have to dig a little deeper to understand the dog whistles behind it. And I think that's the reason behind the Baptist Joint Committee campaign that was discussed earlier. I think that's the reason for this show, so that we can give people warning with regards to listening. And as the Bible would say, study to show ourselves approved. But like I said, just because it may sound good, it doesn't mean it's actually really good.
So you mentioned and that. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, I would just add to that. Edward refers to the dog whistles. And I think that a dog whistle is a whistle you blow that only certain people can hear. And it sends out a message that isn't intended for all. And one of the problems with Christian nationalism, it's not just about promoting Christians and what they believe, but implied in that is that people who are not Christians or who are not the right kinds of Christians are pushed to the edges of society and begin to experience discrimination and second-class treatment. And that's what the dog whistles are calling for, in a sense.
So right after this break, we're going to talk a little bit more about those dog whistles. So stay tuned, stick with us, and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to our discussion today about uniting allegiance to faith with our allegiance to country. So we're going to jump right back into this conversation. In the last segment, we mentioned something about dog whistling. And I want to ask you, Edward, just what exactly are they dog whistling, or who are they dog whistling to? We've heard that Christian nationalism can sometimes be a cover for white supremacy. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it is a fair assessment. Dr. Miller said earlier, the dog whistle is not only intended with regards to supporters, but also those who may not even be interested in Christianity that may be able to identify what they with regards to what they're dog whistling or simply implying. That's the danger with some of these things. And when I shared that with regards to the memes and the depictions that have taken place and the lack of civility as a result of Christian nationalism, it really goes to show that Christian nationalism speaks more to an ideology, as we heard earlier, but less when it comes to the character of Christ. And I believe as Christians, you know, whether we're dealing with the oppressed or the oppressor, we still ought to reflect the character of Christ. And some of the rhetoric and some of the dog whistles that are being espoused actually are doing damage to the character of Christ and Christianity as a whole. But one of the threats that I do see, you know, pushing me a little bit further, is that Christian nationalism is really a threat to religious liberty. You know, when we promote religious liberty, we're not being selfish and only promoting religious liberty for Christians, but we're promoting religious liberty for all people with regards to the right to worship or not to worship according to the dictates of their conscience. So I really see Christian nationalism as a serious threat to religious liberty that where people should be concerned.
So Nick, in the last segment, you also said that Christian nationalism turns to lean a country towards a theocracy. My question is does Christian nationalism seek to dissolve the lines between separation of church and state?
Well, absolutely it does. It pretends not to. Many evangelicals who are Christian nationalists would say, oh no, we respect the First Amendment, but it just means there shouldn't be one national church. But beyond that, they would say the government can support all Christians without problem and without difficulty. The difficulty is that, of course, we're a very pluralistic nation religiously, much more so than when we were founded, when there were hardly anything but Christians here, perhaps a few Jews and one or two Muslims at times. But it took many years for us to become more pluralistic. And another aspect, you know, we talk about the dog whistles of Christian nationalism, and dog whistle is often something that's referred to in the racial context. Politicians calling on the fear of minority groups. And I think it would be a shame for us to talk about the modern Christian nationalism without acknowledging that there is a racial element to it. On January 6th, when we saw the invasion of the Capitol, it wasn't an accident that there were Confederate flags in there, that this return to a call of what America used to be like is during a period when there was racial segregation and division in it. So this Christian nationalism certainly has a white superiority, if not a white supremacist air to it. And so for all these things, it threatens not only religious freedom, but other basic civil and fundamental human rights.
Do you think that Christian nationalism is almost a fear response to a society, not just in the United States, but around the world, becoming more secular, more pluralistic, I guess you can say a response to globalism in a sense. Edward, I'll go to you. What do you think about that?
Well, in November, the Pew Research Center comes out with its annual report with regards to government and social hostilities as it relates to religion. And if you look at the social hostilities index, especially as it relates to in Asia, we see how citizens, private citizens, are able to be nationalists according to the religion of that particular country and try to harm, persecute those who may not follow the state religion. So this is definitely something that's a concern. You can take a look at the Pew Center report and see the increase in social hostilities, once again, done by groups. And that's some of the same things that we're seeing take place right here in America. Nick referenced, the Capitol riots and Confederate flags, but also the justification. If you look in some of those photos, you see biblical texts, like John 3:16. And so it just seems like, how can you say, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Whosoever believeth in him can't be limited to just Christians. Are we saying that only applies to Christians? Can it be someone else? We just really got to just be really careful about how we mix and see these biblical texts associated with Christian nationalism. I find it very frightening. I find it also very frightening where private groups can persecute those who have Christian belief, Muslim beliefs, Jewish beliefs, what have you. We can reference the burning of synagogues. We can reference the burnings of mosques. These are all concerns that are not just limited here in America, but across the world as well.
Right. So across the world, we've seen, again, a rise in authoritarianism and nationalism and nationalist ideas. But how do we as Christians, people that ascribe to the message of Christ, how do we engage into politics without feeding into this nationalist ideas? How do we do that?
So that's a great question. And just because we're opposed to Christian nationalism doesn't mean we're opposed to Christian citizenship, which simply means Christians playing their public roles as citizens of the state in which they live, supporting the government, opposing the government at times if the government is doing something wrong or immoral, supporting moral values. But they should be the moral values that relate among us as citizens and human beings. A quick rule of thumb is the Ten Commandments are on two tables, right? The first table has to do with my relationship with God. The second table with my relationship with my fellow man. So as a Christian citizen, I can support laws relating to theft, murder, adultery, the family, racial and social issues of justice. And that doesn't make me impermissibly bringing in Christian values. But when it comes to the first four tables, first four commands of the first table, prayer, religious rituals, or Christian identity, those are things that are between myself and God as an individual and something that the state should stay out of, and I should not press as a Christian citizen.
So we need to wrap things up, but before we go, we like to leave our viewers with a quick takeaway from this discussion. So I'm just going to ask each of you personally in a few words, what would you tell someone that wants to be politically engaged and wants to identify what is being politically engaged versus what is engaging in politically Christian nationalist ideas? I'll start with you, Edward.
Well, I think the Bible, you know, speaks really clear, whether you're in Deuteronomy 10:7, Romans 10:11, or Hebrews 13:8. It clearly tells us that God shows no partiality or no favoritism. God is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. And so as a person of faith, when I think about Christians versus Christian nationalism, I'm always reminded that God shows no partiality. It's the same in the Old Testament as it is in the New Testament. And that would be the parting shot I would leave with you today, Imani.
Nick, what about you?
Well, I think as Christians, we should avoid partisan politics. We should be neutral as between the Republican and Democratic parties, but we should not be neutral as to moral issues. We should not be neutral as between oppressor and the oppressed. And as Christians, we should be willing to work with either party, all parties, on issues to protect those that are marginalized, to protect civil rights, and to protect religious freedom, but not seek to impose the separate and special agenda that we have from the Bible and isn't supported by other sorts of moral arguments and insights.
Nick, Edward, thank you so much for joining us today. You've been very insightful.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We've had an awesome conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us. And as always, we want to hear from you. You can connect with us anytime. Go to hopetv.org or talk to us on Twitter at GlobalToday7. Keep the conversation going. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.